The January 2021 Board of Commissioners meeting of the Knoxville Metropolitan Knoxville Airport Authority. I'm Brian Simmons. I'll be chairing this meeting. I'd like to remind you of a few things as we get started, to identify yourself prior to speaking, and particularly if you're making a motion or seconding a motion. And please do not try to speak over the other participants. Also, mute your microphones unless you're speaking. That just helps to cut down on the background noise. And all agenda items will be voted on by a roll call vote. So with that, Treva, will you call the roll?
Yes. Mr. Simmons?
Here.
Ms. Bailey?
Here.
Ms. Bentley?
Here.
Mr. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Haar?
Here.
Ms. Cola?
Here.
Mr. Manis? Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Vogel?
Here.
To get us started here, I'd like to ask if a commissioner will make a motion to the effect that the meeting can be held electronically in order to protect the health and the safety and the welfare of all.
Mr. Dawson, I'll second.
Did you get that, Treva?
I believe Ms. Cola made the motion.
Yes.
Mr. Dawson, second.
Okay. The motion is second. And Treva, would you conduct the roll call vote?
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Yes.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Manis? Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
Thank you. The minutes from the prior meeting were in our packet as well as circulated earlier. And if we have any, have a motion and a second, we can also have a discussion about the minutes if needed. But would anyone make a motion to approve the minutes from the December meeting?
So moved.
Second. Ursula, second.
Okay, having a motion and second, are there any discussions or revisions that are needed on the minutes? Hearing none, Treva, can you conduct a roll call vote?
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Aye.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. I have a few announcements. Commissioner Bailey, as some of you know, has been working on an initiative with the staff toward youth education meant on an aviation focus. And I'd like to call on Commissioner Bailey, if you would, to give us an update on this important initiative.
Sure. I am a member of the Links Incorporated, which is a service organization group. We engage in educational, civil, and cultural activities in our community. For those of you who may remember her, Henrietta Grant was one of our original members of the Link. So we have a longstanding relationship with the Knoxville area. We have five facets, and those are services to youth, national trends and services, international trends and services, health and human services, and the arts. And so what we try to do is mold programs around those facets and actually we want to come up with an umbrella program. And this is our program for at least the next coming fiscal year. And we hope it'll be something that we can expound on. So what we have done is partnered with the airport to bring what we call the elite ACES. And elite, we means links, the E is silent, links interested in technology education and aviation career education. And what we are doing is targeting underserved representatives from the community. We have focused on the age group of 12 to 16 year olds, and we have a series of programs that we are presenting to them. We will have the students fill out applications. We will screen them, and then they go through our program, which is webinars, interactive programs, and each of the programs will have something to do with aviation. It doesn't have to be literal. For example, our arts program, we are thinking of having the kids take pictures of butterflies or anything else that may remind them of something in aviation. And once we have finished with our part of the program, then we will turn it over to the airport. Of course, we'll still be involved. And then they will have more of a hands-on experience akin to the Aviation Academy. So this is something that we hope will be foregoing, that we hope will inspire kids to come into the aviation field. And because most kids in these underserved communities only know about pilots and flight attendants and maybe mechanics, but they don't know all the other components that are in the aviation field. So we're trying to expose them to other things in aviation. And of course, I'm still hoping to get them interested in things like being a pilot, but expose them to things that they would not otherwise be exposed to. A lot of the kids that we are targeting have never even been to the airport. They've never been on a plane. So we're hoping to expose them to something new, get them excited, and get them interested in this field. We are focusing on STEM kids because they've already shown some type of interest in what we're trying to do. So we're going to the STEM academies, we're going to the STEM curriculums in the schools, middle schools mostly, some high schools, and hopefully getting these kids interested in our program. We'll take the first part in the webinars and all the mostly virtual activities. And hopefully by the time we get through that portion of it, when it's time for them to come to the airport and do the hands-on, this COVID thing will be gone. And Patrick and Becky, feel free to jump in if I've missed anything.
I'll say from staff perspective, I appreciate Ursula kind of seed of this idea, I think, came about probably last May. And when Ursula kind of set the goals of what the Links program was looking for, and the fact that we certainly very much as the airport want to promote the future of aviation in all aspects of aviation, you know, pilots, mechanics, just you name the many types of jobs that we have at the airport, it seemed like a great opportunity. And we have a great resource with our staff, particularly Becky, in what's been developed for the Aviation Academy. So I think, Ursula, we're looking at targeting around 15 young people for this first class. So we're keeping it small by design.
Right.
But very much we're excited about it. And Becky's doing a great job of taking what we've learned through the Aviation Academy. So we will keep the board updated as we progress, and then eventually report back after we have the first class through and tell you how it went.
Hey, Ursula, this is Jeff Smith. Thank you for taking the initiative on this. Let me just offer, I obviously this is the first I've heard about it, but if there's anything in here where you need a board member to help with, whether it's in a webinar or anything, please don't hesitate to ask. I would be more than willing to participate.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I can't take all the credit. Actually, Patrick reached out to me and asked me if there was something I thought that the community could benefit from, that the airport could be involved in. And so this was something that I thought about back when I did the Aviation Academy, that I noticed that, to be honest, I was the only Black person in there. And we went over to Cirrus and I was the only Black person in there. And so I saw that there was just a need to serve underrepresented people, and not just by race, but by gender, by economic status, people who don't normally go into this field. So Patrick and I started bouncing ideas off of each other, and we brought the links in, and this is where we are now.
All right, well, thank you, staff and Commissioner Bailey. And I think it's a wonderful initiative in taking the aviation industry to these kids in at their critical age when they're starting to think about careers, and it just lets them know that there's a big world out there. So thank you very much for that. Also, another commissioner, Commissioner Cola, who in addition to being a top real estate professional, always seems to have her finger on the pulse of our region in terms of economic trends. And if I could, I'd like to call on Commissioner Cola, if you wouldn't mind sharing with the board and the staff some of the trends that you're seeing right now in our region.
Right now, I'm seeing a market, we're seeing a market that I have never seen in the 40 years plus of being in the commercial real estate business in the Knoxville region. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples, but in the middle of the shutdown, we began to start getting calls out of Chicago, New York, California, calls that we never would have gotten 5 to 10 years ago. Two examples. One of them, we sold a manufacturing facility, sight unseen, out of California. Fella showed up, the buyer had someone take pictures of the manufacturing facility. He showed up after the closing with his family, picked up the keys, put his kids in school, bought a house, and put up his manufacturing facility for sale in California. Another one, pretty dramatic, is that there have been a lot of small colleges that have closed over the past 5 to 7 years. And we had struggled with Hiawassee College in Madisonville, 200-acre small college. We've been working on it about 18 months. Middle of the pandemic, we got a call out of California. Group was putting it under contract again, sight unseen, close to asking price. Had someone go take pictures, and then at the last minute before the contract was signed, we had a group out of New York come in here on a jet and put it under, we ended up selling it at 10% above asking price, 200-acre college campus in Madisonville. We were adding property to that. It will go up to 530 acres. The first stage will bring 200 people out of New York State to live in Madisonville, and that's on the first 200 acres to live, work, have a school, and then they will be expanding it up to 530 acres. U-Haul produces an annual migration report. Tennessee was number one for one-way arrivals for U-Haul trucks. Next was Texas. Knoxville had the eighth largest increase in migration out of Chicago for 2020. This is the same thing that Greenville, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, Charleston, cities like that are seeing, that these companies are looking to come, that we're getting the advantage of being in the Southeast and Southwest. Also, from residential brokers, what we hear is that we now have the lowest inventory of houses that they have ever seen in their career. Houses are going at full price or above. So I guess we're getting calls that 3 to 5 years ago, we would have never gotten. Someone didn't wake up in Los Angeles, pick up the phone and say, I think I'll move to Knoxville, Tennessee. Those are the calls we're getting. Also, investment funds. We've gotten some investment funds calling on us in the past, but right now we get calls every single day from investment funds looking for product in the Knoxville region. We have no industrial product at all right now. We've been under 2-3% for 3 years. Now we don't have anything. If people call, we can't find them warehouse product, very little. Office is still a little soft, but not dead. The multifamily is still strong demand. Retail is still soft, but we really do feel like that as soon as the virus is over, that we get the vaccinations, that the retail will come back. And hotels in Pigeon Forge in Sevier County are still selling. A lot of tourism. In Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, the hotel owners are saying they had the best August in their career, best September, best October, best November. Any questions?
Do we have any questions for Maribel? Well, thank you very much.
The property that you mentioned, the Hiawassee College,
yes.
I didn't catch. Was it sold to a firm to relocate a business?
No, it is a community. It is a community, and they are moving families from New York to live in Madisonville. They will also add the school. They'll have a school, and they will begin to include people from the community to the school, recruit, but right now it'll be just the community out of New York State, families. And they came because they wanted live, work, school, and the regulations were so difficult in other states, and this to them to go to a rural community was advantageous.
Interesting. Thank you very much for those insights. It sounds like it's a positive in the economic development, positive with jobs, and positive with population increase. And I think all that, Jim Evans, should help us with some more ammunition. So thank you very much for pointing that out. Please keep us up to date with that. The third announcement I have concerns just holding this meeting electronically. We want to stay true to the fact that this is a public meeting, and as such, we've invited the public to comment on any agenda item and or request to speak in front of the board, and I'm seeing that we don't have any comments or anyone's requested, so I guess we'll move on from that. So Patrick, do you have any announcements? If not, you can go to your president's report.
Okay, yes, I'll wrap it all into the president's report and refer to in your board packet. You have the activity report. I will not go into that in detail, but in really to tie this back to one comment that Steve Van Beek made during our strategic plan workshop is, trying to use technology and produce data to help us manage through. So hopefully the activity report, we've certainly, it's evolved and over the last year, hopefully it's useful to you. And please continue to give us feedback, whether we need to simplify it, add to, or anything else. Overall, you'll see that our passenger activity for the month of November was down about 55%. So starting back in April of 2020 at our low point of around 4% of the previous April of 2019, we began a slow climb out and hit a kind of a high point of about 45 or 50% in October. We've seen that plane off a little bit in November and December. So we seem to be right around that 45 or 50%. And we are currently working passenger projections that we'll use going into the budget process for the FY2 budget, what both fiscal year and calendar year 21 and 22 are going to look like. You'll also see in there the activity report for aircraft, total operations for the year to date through November for calendar year 20 were down around 28%, and general aviation activity down about 1%. So general aviation still continues to hold a little stronger. Jumping to the financial report, you'll see through the fiscal year 21 through the end of November, our overall revenues were up around $500,000 positive variance than the original budget, and our operating expenses were down $2 million below our budgeted expenses. And those budgeted expenses, that $2 million savings is on top of the reductions we made in the budget going into the fifth. So we're still very well on track, actually ahead as far as net operating income. We're to the year-to-date through November, over $2 million ahead of where we expected to be. So continue to just recognize the efforts of the organization to control expenses in this unpredictable environment. And then you'll also see a longer version of a projects report. You'll see this continue to evolve. This has kind of been our next focus. Our engineering and planning department have broken the projects down into three categories. The planning and programming category to show you what we have in the works there. Also the design category, so those projects that we've selected to move forward and are actively in design on, and then finally the construction category. So you'll see a lot of projects in the works in one of those phases, and please continue to give us your input on this report. It will be continuing to evolve over the next few months as a way to give you a source to go to help you better understand and track projects. So your input is welcome to us there. A few other announcements for the President's report is that the U.S. Congress did approve an airport coronavirus response grant program nationwide. That program was approved for about $2 billion. We have not received an exact amount as to what we expect to receive at McGee-Tyson or Downtown Island Airport. We have our best estimate at this point around $4 million, and you can think of that as a CARES Act 2 for airports. So not nearly as large as the first round of funding we had last spring, but we expect to have $4 million as another source of federal assistance that we can use to help us continue to grow out of the downturn. And we will be reporting back to you in the future as we get the details of that grant program, of what it's eligible for, and then adding that to our grant strategy for helping us manage through the downturn. Also on the federal level, we received late last week a request from the FAA Administrator Steve Dixon, and the administrator put together a video that he asked airports to help distribute. So we have done that on our communication channels. And basically, the FAA and the administrator are expressing to passengers that the FAA is taking very seriously any concerns where a passenger may disrupt the flight for any reason. So they're pushing that information out. So if you see that come out on our information channels, that's in response to the FAA administrator's request, where they've had incidents of passengers, whether they be non-compliant and wearing masks or a number of other issues, disrupt flights. And the FAA and the administrator have taken a very firm stance on that, and we're at their request helping distribute that information. And then a look ahead, it's budget season for us, so we'll certainly, staff is working on all aspects of our budget, from the capital budget to the personnel budget, and finally that'll come together in the full operating budget. So with that, it will also be committee season for the board, so you can expect that we'll have a number of committee meetings in various subject matters between now and June for that budget process. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my report.
I'd like to say that the monthly projects report I found was very useful. Thank you for staff putting in the effort to do that. It's nice to see these, at least on a, even if just nothing to talk about at the board meeting to be able to have this on our mind every month, all the different projects that we have ongoing. So does any other commissioner have any questions or comments for Patrick about his report? Okay, hearing none, we can move on to consider the consent calendar. Patrick, will you present that?
Certainly will. Consent calendar is included in your board packet. Staff would recommend it as presented. We would be glad to address any questions if there are any.
Thank you. We have a motion to approve the consent calendar as presented.
Ursula, so move.
Jeff seconds.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Are there any questions or comments, discussion items before we vote? If not, Treva, will you please conduct the roll call vote?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Aye.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
We can move on to the new business. The first item.
Okay.
Patrick?
Item number one of new business is a request and a recommendation to authorize the president in consultation with the chairman to redeem and pay off the debt that we have associated with the ExpressJet maintenance facility. So it's a hangar we own. At one of the unfortunate downsides to the drop in passengers and the significant impact to the airline industry is the loss of ExpressJet. They are a regional carrier that was impacted by a cut from United Airlines. And as we know, unfortunately, that took the 200 plus jobs that were operating at that facility away, and ExpressJet did not continue their lease. That lease basically was designed to cover the cost of debt service, which was about $1.2 million a year on that facility. And so we still have 5 years of bond debt service remaining on that. In May, we thought there was a chance that could happen. So as part of our CARES Act strategy for the first round of CARES Act aid that we received, we did build that into our CARES Act strategy. And at this point, we would like to proceed with that plan. That is a total outstanding debt of around $6,070,000 and an additional approximate interest of $80,000. So this act would, as we previously presented with CARES Act, allow us to go forward and pay off the remaining debt service using CARES Act funds on the ExpressJet facility. And that relieves us from having to next year, without a tenant being in there actively, come up with that $1.2 million of debt service. And it also reduces the debt service ratio we have in our bond covenants. And ultimately, and I can say that Jim Evans and staff are actively marketing that facility. We have received some interest in it, but our real goal is to get a tenant back in there to replace the lost revenue, but also bring the 200 plus jobs, really, really good technical jobs for our region, back to the airport. But when that happens, paying this off allows that new revenue in the future when we do fulfill that lease to be positive revenue for us to help our operating income. So with that, staff would recommend that the president be authorized in consultation with the chairman of the board and the Airport Authority's vice president of finance to cause the redemption of the indebtedness of the Airport Authority relating to the ExpressJet hangar and is dependent upon reimbursement for this redemption through the CARES Act fund.
Thank you, Patrick. We have a staff recommendation in front of us. Do we have
Mr. Chairman, Charlie, I recommend approval. This is in, it tracks with our discussion with Steve about our debt position and actually improves our debt position for the future. So I recommend approval.
Vogel seconds.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion or any other comment from a board member? I'd like to echo the comments from Commissioner Haar as well. I think improving our debt service coverage, i.e. reducing our debt obligations, is the right thing to do. And I appreciate the staff being proactive about bringing this opportunity to our attention. With that, Treva, will you conduct the roll call vote?
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Aye.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
The second order of business?
Item number two is a recommendation from staff to approve a purchase from Stringfellow Equipment Company for a pavement sweeper. The project, the equipment has a cost of $305,490 and was planned for in our capital projects budget. So we would recommend that equipment purchase for an airfield sweeper from Stringfellow Equipment Company.
Thank you. We have a staff recommendation before us. Do we have a motion to approve?
I will so move.
We have a second.
I'll second. This is Julia.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion or comments? If not, hearing none. Treva, will you conduct the roll call vote, please?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Aye.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
Thank you, Patrick.
Item number three is a recommendation for work authorization number 21312. And that is under the existing general consultant agreement we have with Gresham Smith. And this is for environmental compliance assistance and includes Gresham Smith's assistance with quarterly inspections, both at McGee Tyson and Downtown Island Airport. Also work with the annual comprehensive site compliance evaluation and our stormwater pollution prevention plan, among other environmental services. The dollar amount for the work authorization is $15,600 for a one-year period.
Thank you. We have a staff recommendation before us. Is there a motion to approve?
Mr. Joe Dawson, I move.
Thank you.
Approval.
Do we have a second?
Vogel seconds.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. Treva, will you conduct the roll call vote, please?
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Aye.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye. Okay.
Thank you. The motion passes. Patrick?
Item number four is a recommendation of a continuation of a professional services agreement with Pratt Government Strategies. We have been working with Pratt Government Strategies since 2015, and they represent us mostly on the state legislative level, although they are available also on federal issues. The annual amount on that is $48,000. And I can say that the last 5 years has probably been the busiest 5 years in airport history for Tennessee for legislative issues at the state level. We've dealt with everything from guns in the airport bills to efforts to try to for companies to not or to be exempted from having to pay for conducting business, commercial business on the airport. to trying to preserve and protect and actually grow our state funding. So having lobbyist representation in Nashville has been very important in that time, and I think it will continue to be so. So with that, we would recommend continuing our work with Pratt government strategies in the amount of $4,000 a month for an annual $48,000 amount.
Patrick, we have a staff recommendation before the board. Is there a motion to approve?
Yeah. Paula, so move.
Do we have a second?
Ursula, second.
Thank you. I have a motion and a second. Is there a discussion? Okay. Hearing none. Treva?
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Ms. Bailey?
Aye.
Ms. Bentley?
Aye.
Mr. Dawson?
Aye.
Mr. Haar?
Aye.
Ms. Cola?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Vogel?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion carries. That concludes our new business items. Now on to a staff report. Patrick, will you introduce Alan for us?
Certainly will. Have Alan Jones. He is here way on the other side of the 510 Center from us, but his presentation hopefully will come up in front of you on a screen share. Alan is our director of administration. Among the things Alan does to us is leads us and represents this organization in the community in a number of ways, but one of those is through our Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. So we'd like to give Alan an opportunity to give the board an update on what that program is and some of the activities that he's been conducting to represent the airport and the community. Alan?
Thank you, Patrick. And for the next few minutes, I would like to share with you an overview and a brief update on the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program, otherwise known as the DBE program. Hopefully everyone can hear me. Greetings to all. We'll begin with the reason we have a program is because we receive federal financial assistance. And when we get those federal dollars, we're required to establish goals for participation of DBEs, which are disadvantaged business enterprises. Over the 15 years I've been a part of this organization, I've been very happy to have been a part of establishing a wide DBE network. And we have a network of DBE advocates, associations, and we've also produced a number of outreach events to help our potential disadvantaged business enterprises, along with other small businesses as well. And the list before you is it's not exhaustive, but it has some of the key organizations and events that we're a part of to promote the DBE program and include minorities, women-owned businesses, veteran-disabled businesses, and others. Our small business program is an aspect of our total DBE program. Some may recall that in 2012, we adopted a small business element of our DBE program. And because of that, we strive for what is termed in the DBE world a race-neutral strategy. Race-neutral is a bit of a misnomer because it actually includes gender. But what it means is essentially we cast a wide net to try to capture and reach out to small businesses of all kinds in order to include them in our projects when we have projects available. And we do advertising and outreach to a number of entities and through some of those special events that we hold to outreach to businesses of all kinds. And once we have our certified DBEs, we actually conduct pre-bid meetings when we have construction opportunities, and we invite our DBEs there. And we also request that our primes, our subs, and our DBEs exchange information to help facilitate those relationships that have to be built in order to do business together. Also, once the bids are submitted, the DBEs have to submit a letter of intent signed so that we'll know what kind of work they intend on doing. And we also have to do a good faith evaluation of the bids once they come in. So that's another part of what we do. In addition, once the work commences, we're responsible for actually monitoring the construction work that the DBEs participate in. We have two parts to our DBE program. We're governed by 49 CFR Code of Federal Regulations, Part 26, which governs the construction side of the program, and Part 23, which governs the concession side of the DBE program. That part is called the ACDBE program, the Airport Concessions DBE. As part of our program, again, I mentioned before that we're required to establish goals. So our current goals are under the construction side, Part 26, 10.8%. Our goals for the concession side are divided into two parts, 3% for non-car concessions and 1% for car rental concessions. For a DBE to be eligible for our program, there are certain things that they have to prove. They bear the burden of proof when they are applying for a DBE status and certification. So the DBE owner has to be 51% owner by a DBE individual. That individual or individuals have to be socially and economically disadvantaged. The social disadvantage is met if they are a minority or a female. The economic disadvantage is met as long as their personal net worth is less than $1.32 million. Also, the size determination has to be met by the business. It depends on the type of business, but it has to comply with the SBA standards. Also, the DBE has to prove that they have actual control of their business. There's been a lot of fraud over the history of the program in the past. So a way of eliminating that fraud is through our certification process, in which we make sure we examine the ability of the DBE owner to actually control and direct the management and the policies of the firm. And again, the burden of proof is on the DBE to prove that at the application stage. One of the things that the DBE liaison officer, which is part of my title, what we're responsible for is to make sure we're connecting DBEs, minority women-owned businesses, and other small businesses to contracting opportunities when they arise. And especially, we try to do a lot of outreach to firms that are historically underutilized in their fields. I serve as the liaison between the business and the airport authority staff, and I'm happy to say we have a great staff because our ops staff, our executive staff, I get participation from all parts of our staff to help with some of the outreach activities. And also when I meet with various businesses, I may connect them, for instance, to the IT department. If that's what they do, I may connect them to the operations department if they have products to sell related to what we do in operations. So our staff has been very helpful in doing that. And then I do a number of other things to help network with the small firms, assist firms in obtaining the DBE certification. And we are one of the certifying entities in our uniform certification program. The DBE program is always in a state of change and update and regulations, so it's required that we participate in ongoing training. So this is an example of one of the trainings that I dealt with last year, and it was 12 hours online training dealing with principals involved in certification and the general DBE program. One of the positive points of the uniform certification program, which we at the airport are a part of, is the TDOT Supportive Services Consultants. This is a picture of Tyler and Associates, and Victor Tyler is in the middle with the green tie. He is a civil engineer and wrote a book on estimating. So what they do is they go around the state and we help. And when they come to East Tennessee, we help set up the workshops and invite our DBE businesses and potential applicants to those workshops so that they can learn about the business aspect of improving their business in accounting, in human resources, and how to estimate a job, and how to hire, how to fire, the technology piece. They provide all kinds of services, and they've done a great job over the years. One of the important components is providing support to our local minority and women-owned businesses and other underserved groups. And this includes partnerships and networking as well as sponsorships when possible. So we do a lot of advertising of our program in different events for our communities because we find that way we get the word out to the communities that typically would not hear about it. So we do a lot of community outreach. I've been invited to be a part of the City of Knoxville's groups to help encourage them and come up with ideas and brainstorm ways of increasing business that the city does with DBEs. Also, the TDOT annual conference is one that we do a lot of outreach to DBEs all over the state of Tennessee. And the last time we were able to have our TDOT conference, the U.S. DOT actually piggybacked on that conference and joined us, and we had their officials, officials from all over the state of Tennessee, several of the airports meeting together to reach out to DBEs to provide opportunities for them as well. We have also supported over the years the Asian Festival and other festivals as well. And what we do with those is providing a level of support and sponsorships. And out of that, for the Asian Festival, grew an Asian business seminar. And an official from the Tennessee Department of Economic and Community Development hosted and conducted a training session for Asian business and for anyone that wanted to attend. So that was one of the great outcomes from our outreach and our support. The last fiscal event we had that was an outreach event was the Business Expo in East Knoxville at OBC Church. And we had members from all over the community to come out and join us. And again, some of our staff members helped with that. And we appreciate that support. As you can see, Metropolitan Nashville Airport was part of that group. A KUB, Knox Area Transit, KCDC, Knoxville Community Development Corporation, Public Building Authority, and many other entities joined together, and we worked together to present these events. One of the new events that we supported was Live, Learn, Grow Conference. It was a conference for women veterans, and women veteran business owners set up booths at this conference, and we enjoyed reaching out to them. And also, just comments, the pictures, most of the pictures in this presentation come from a private owner business, female business owner, who applied and achieved DBE status. Maryville College reached out to us and at one point developed what they called a business advisory council, which later on was expanded to the partnership advisory council. So we're involved through outreach with them as well. And then one of my favorite outreach events is the Tennessee Veterans Business Association, which has become an annual event that we provide a sponsorship to advertise our program and to support the event and to outreach. As COVID looms, we had to change our gears and take the precautions as necessary. And as a result, we have had some virtual business seminars. And this one was one that was sponsored by Messer, but it was also included with the City of Knoxville and some other entities. And we represented the airport with that outreach event. And we're doing more of those. And to conclude this presentation, these are two of the recent DBEs that were certified. We're continuing our certification efforts. Renisha Beljor of KCS started a janitorial business, and she was certified during this COVID pandemic. Also, Rachel Buchanan of Otter Enterprises was recently certified. So she's successful, and she has already done some work with us here at the airport, and she is part of a bid that I believe she's going to be successful in being able to participate with one of our construction projects as well. That's all, folks. I appreciate your attention, and be glad to answer any questions you might have. Hopefully this presentation will help you to realize that the Metropolitan Knoxville Airport Authority supports minority women and small business enterprises. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. That's wonderful with the outreach that you've been doing, and excited to see the successes that have come from that. That is wonderful. So we, as the board, applaud you and your efforts for that.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do we know how many or what percentage of the airport business goes to MBEs?
We have our set construction goals. So for instance, I think on our last report, we achieved somewhere around the figure of 12% of participation, which resulted on our construction projects, which resulted in about $1.5 million going to DBEs. And we have continued that from before I was here. I've been here 15 years, and we've been very successful on our construction side in including DBEs of different backgrounds. The challenge that we have is on the concession side. Essentially, there are not a lot of local opportunities on the concession side, but we have had some successes, and we're trying to build on those successes.
What are we doing to try to attract more businesses or these businesses to in the concession and in the retail or anything else outside of construction?
We continue our outreach efforts, and when we get DBEs that sort of fit what our concession opportunities would allow for, we pretty much kind of walk them through the certification process. For example, we had a young lady that has a gourmet popcorn business. Well, she was certified. She was connected to Host, and the opportunity was there, but then came COVID. And that sort of put a stop to that particular situation. Also, we have a classic Shine, of the shoe shine concession, and she became a DBE. She's from out of state. So with the DBE program, even though we have reciprocity, which means if you're a DBE in state A, you can be a DBE in state B, but you have to be certified in your home state first, and then you apply through the local, the state DOT for acceptance, as long as they don't see an issue with the certification that was done. So we had talked to her a couple of years ago about applying in her home state to get that DBE status. She got it, and then she received the reciprocal certification in Tennessee. So now she's one of our DBEs, and we can count the monies that she receives for her business. And of course, she's been impacted as well. But we continue that kind of action so that we're actually hand-holding those DBEs that have an opportunity. And we meet with our general concessionaires to emphasize the need to comply with our goals.
Is there anything that we should be looking at or that we could do immediately or changes we can make that can increase our numbers and of business relationships with DBEs?
One of the conversations we've had with our advocacy groups and sort of a common denominator among all of them has been if we could increase our purchasing thresholds. One of the things the city has led in is doing an outreach conference just for that portion of work so that if our purchasing threshold was raised, like the city, like maybe PBA, like KUB and some of these other entities, it would make it a little bit easier for us to deal with some of the smaller DBEs that otherwise would never get business at the table. So that is something that our group has talked about, and each one has gone to their own groups to try to get that raised.
I think, as far as I know, the airport has one of the lowest thresholds of the area, and I think maybe we can implore the financial committee to take a look at that, maybe increase our monetary threshold for those businesses.
And Ursula, I can give you a little feedback on that. And I would agree that, currently our procurement policy is set that anything over $1,000 has to go out for bid. And that's in my opinion, very low and very restrictive on us. And so I'll connect this to the effort. If you recall, several months ago, Chairman Manis put forward an effort for us to modernize our bylaws, and Mark Mamontoff and I have been working on that, the chairman at the time appointed Commissioner Vogel as our board representative on that. The process that we're going through, Mark and I are to say we're excited about updating the bylaws and our policy is an understatement. We continue to trip across a long history of policies that go back in the 80s and 90s that we think will make us a much more efficient operation, organization, and be much more nimble. And so we're working on that. We have a draft set of the bylaws ready. So our next steps are to put together the companion pieces of that on policy. And particularly our procurement policy is going to be one of those that we're going to work on first. Hopefully, potentially by May, we would be in a position to present an update to the bylaws and some of our purchasing authority and our procurement authority. So that's in the works. And I think it's going to help us in a lot of fronts, but particularly in maybe creating more and easier opportunities for DBE participation, because that $1,000 limit is probably the lowest that I know of, and it's quite a hindrance on many fronts as we try to conduct business. So I'll simplify all that and say, but hopefully by this summer we're going to have a new set of procurement policies that the board can evaluate and hopefully put in place.
Thank you.
And what you can't see is Mark cheering over here. Yeah, there you can't see him. We're Mark and I are excited about this.
Yeah, we saw him. Good. Good, Eric.
Thank you, Commissioner Bailey, for bringing up those good points, and look forward to the bylaws as well as being adjusted to modern day. So do you have anything else, Patrick?
That concludes, Mr. Chairman, anything from staff.
Okay. If I don't see anything else on our agenda before the board, so With that, I think we're adjourned. Thank you all for your service.